Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. Oh, why the show tune music for the internet's only college football podcast, you ask? Why the sounds of drums as if a show was beginning? Probably because I think we're just going to end up talking a lot about Las Vegas tonight, boys. And by boys, I mean boys, because Holly's out tonight, our frequent guest, Holly Anderson. And in addition to that, Ryan is out. And that leaves you and me, Jason, along with Sturber. What's up, Sturber? Chime in. Hello? Oh, how we doing?
This is your captain speaking.
Uh-oh. Can you imagine, by the way, if the pilot who influenced everyone's voice and the way that we speak over airplane radios was not Chuck Yeager from West Virginia with his distinct laconic growl over the mic, but instead it was like Fred Schneider of the B-52s, right? It's your captain speaking! We're landing!
Well, I think the thing there is every plane would have to be a B-52. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. 737? Well, yeah, that's what it says on the side of the fuselage, but we're going to call it a B-52, buddy.
Like, yeah, we're making great time in this B-52. We're going to, we got wind at our back. We're going to shave half an hour off. I mean, obviously, all this would be delivered in Fred Schneider voice, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to have Mulaney. No problem finding taxi space because, you know, if they don't clear out, we're just going to bomb the hell out of Newark.
That's how you're landing in Newark, actually. We're dropping you right on the runway.
The only way to get a spot.
Like the Muppets, we're just going to throw you right out of the cargo hold. This plane's going to Milan. You're going here.
When you said boys only show, like Ryan is the only man here.
Right. Yeah, Ryan is the only man. The only man, but he's not the adult. The only adult is Holly, right?
Sure,
somehow, somehow Ryan has gotten to man. No, man child. I will put Ryan at man child status.
Okay.
Right. Whereas
Floyd's the adult.
Yeah, Floyd is the adult. I am the weirdest result, which is very old boy.
Yeah,
he's a very old.
I was
boy.
Thinking. When I was, you can tell me if you were like this at all. When I was like, you know, 4, 5, 6 or whatever, I was like, ugh, I'm an old soul, right? Like, mm-hmm. I was basically 14 at age 3. But here's the thing. Once I passed 14, I never stopped being 14. I've just been, like, between age 2 and right now, I've been 14 the entire time.
14. So you think that's, like, your chronological default in your brain? Right?
Yeah.
Because there's probably points in the day where you go, I'm feeling about 32. And then you go, I'm feeling about 71 right now. And then you probably might bounce back down to like, you know, 17. But then you end up settling on 14, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it's just always been 14. Like when I was, you know, 8 or whatever. Oh, I'm so much smarter than these idiots in second grade, whatever fucking grade you're in, you know? But mm-hmm. like, of course, no, I wasn't. You know, it was just a snobby little dickhead. But like, Now that I have passed the age of 14, there has been no change. Just an entire life lived at age 14.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent set, though, because you're at 14, you're starting to at least come a little bit out of the fog of pre-adolescence. Pre-adolescence is the time where I think everybody's just sort of a lump, just an unformed mm-hmm. mass of gelatinous goo sliding around in cargo shorts. That's pretty much what I think most pre-adolescence is.
Was there the question for the both of you, was there a point in your mm-hmm. life when you sort of realized, like, I'm a person?
No. Still working on
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, it might have been age 14, I guess.
Was it age 14? Yeah. Sometimes I remember my first self-actualized moment, which is where mm-hmm. I refused the leather jacket photo. In high school, I was 17. That's the first time I remember having a distinct sense of identity because they wanted me to take the leather jacket photo. And I remember feeling with biblical certainty from my heels, like from the core of the earth itself, a wellspring of deep rage and self-affirmation like, no, I don't have to do that. It's like a Cool Hand Luke moment, right? Like,
yeah.
Nah, no, I'm getting out of here. You can put me in solitary all you want. I'm getting out of here.
God, so that's so I don't fucking think, badass.
I know. I don't think I had like a single bit of identity until I was 17. And they were like, hey, put on the leather jacket. And I was like, no, that's this ridiculous.
For, is this for like a yearbook thing? Or
yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we're going to put you in a leather jacket because I don't know. We just put people in leather jackets. Got a lot of people from Long Island here.
Were they putting all the guys in leather jackets?
Or? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was like one of the options you got, you know. Or not okay. options. It was just like one of the shots. And then if you liked the way you looked in the leather jacket, and the guy was like, you don't want to try the leather jacket? And I was like, who wears that shit? No.
Yeah.
And I was like, who is talking? Who is saying these words coming out of my mouth? Who has grabbed hold of the wheel?
Oh, shit. It's me. Oh, no.
No. An idiot.
You're telling me I have to be this guy from here on out?
No.
Yeah. That, I'm trying to. Oh man. Now I wish I had such a badass origin story.
I just remember thinking, I was like, that shit's hot. No, nobody wears that shit. Nobody yeah. looks good in it either. There's like one person who looks good in a leather jacket. And that's like Steve McQueen. That's it.
Did he offer alternatives?
No. He was just baffled.
Wow.
And you know what? Honestly, I was too. I don't think that helped him. You know, it was like I had been, it was like, you know, somebody had taken over the controller and just said, no, you're going to decline it. That is my Yakuza moment, right? So, in the middle of high school.
There's this basically discredited, totally made up theory of like human development that like 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years ago, we were all like automatons. Like we look back mm-hmm. at stuff they did back then and it's like, why the fuck did 10,000 people spend their entire lives building a monument that they wouldn't even see the end of, right? Like, were we just hive minds? You know, we're, mm-hmm. And like the ideas that like trade routes and exchanging languages and different, you know, different hand gestures and stuff sort of like broke the human mind until it became actually conscious or whatever. But like, I don't know, man, that feels like everyone under the age of 10. Like, I think people are still like that until somewhere between the age of 10 and 30. They just sort of look up and like, ah, shit, I'm a person.
Yeah, man, I'm not going to build this pyramid for a dude.
Fucking yeah. monument. You got to pay me $13 an hour because that's all anyone will pay for this fucking
yeah.
monument.
Yeah. Instead, actually, we were thinking about beating you until you did it. That works too. That works too. Yeah. If you really want to just hit me until I do this.
Hey, Cerber, when did you become a person?
I don't really know. Like, I have, like, I feel like my earliest memory, at least, is. Someone asked, I was like at my babysitter, like the place I went for daycare when I was a kid, and someone asked me what my name was. It was like my first day there, and I think I just said, I'm two. But then I think like I guess like the only thing I have that comes anywhere close is like on the badass level would be, well, I guess when I was like playing football, when I was like in the eighth grade, I remember I wasn't very good, and I was like, I thought I was, like, resigned to just sucking. And I was like, no, I'm just going to get really pissed off. And I'm just going to, like, knock the shit out of someone. And I did. And then I stopped sucking. Like, I just
Hell
wasn't
yeah.
the worst anymore.
Hell
I, but
yeah.
that's, like, the closest I have. But I don't know if I realized. I probably realized I was a person before that. Probably, like, pooping yeah. my pants when I wasn't supposed to. Maybe something like that. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm a person now. I don't do this.
Uh-oh, I have shit in my pants. And I'm the one who has to deal with it.
I don't think that happened often. Maybe once, so maybe it was that time.
Okay. I have 35 okay. such revelations, all detailed in my journal from when I was 4.
Maybe that's the time I learned I was a Spencer.
Yeah, that's oh, no. Like I said, I was horrified by this realization, too. That's what I remember the moment of becoming as, a terrible moment, where you're like, oh, no. No, you're going to be the guy, you're going to be a problem. This is bad. But I think that was last time. That was last time I had to deal with that. So maybe it'll happen in my 50s, you know, be like 56. Be like, no, I'm not going to wear this windbreaker that you make a 56-year-old wear when I'm lawn bowling or whatever 56-year-old men do. I look forward to finding out. It'll be great. I wanted to go over something that two of us are familiar with, one of us is not. They're the only bit of even remotely college football type business on the docket in the vast sea of May. We're now very close to the time when everybody in this sport just goes on vacation and has children. Go and look, the birthdays of most coaches' children falls somewhere around 9 months from either now or like the first week of June. It is the slowest point in the calendar. So what better time to hire a new Pac-12 commissioner? Yeah, just to get it done, and to hire somebody who is steady and who has worked in college athletics before and who has a background in dealing with the vagaries of college administration and with TV deals and with everything that you need to know about the very perverse, unique environment that college athletics occupies. Jason, that's who the Pac-12 hired, right? That's who we got.
Yeah. The so one thought on coach children being born in May is when are they thrown in the oven then? Would that be August? Like right before the season starts? Like, bye, honey, I'm disappearing for 5 months. I've given you I'll see you when the baby's out. God, that's depressing.
It is right on time. And I think most of those kids are born, what, they're conceived in June, May or June, 5-6. So, you know, right around, like, you know, after recruiting's done.
If season's starting, here's a baby. I'll meet it after spring ball.
Damn it, yeah. Ellen, we got spring ball. I done told you. Hold it in there.
Keep it in there. I can't. We only got one practice left before the red-white game.
That's it. Listen, you call me. If it's past the third quarter, I could do it, because the third stringers are in there. They're piss poor, and I already know that. Okay?
If it's the fourth quarter, we'll have the radio guy will be calling plays anyway, because we got this stupid gimmick where the radio guy calls plays in the fourth quarter. So you can have your baby then.
Yeah, you know, but do me a favor. Let's try to win this in the fourth quarter. If we can just keep it close until the fourth.
Can't you just stand upside down or something?
Yeah, just do that. You've been doing that yoga. Why don't you just go do a headstand for a minute? Keep that sucker in. All right. I love you. Did I say that? It's my second time this year.
I said it in August, didn't I? That's how we got in this mess.
Yeah. Actually, let's go back to the film. This is when I told you I loved you 7 months ago. See the sincerity? Look right here. I'm circling. There's the hand gesture indicating that how much I mean it and how much you mean to me.
And you can see the film because it was during his introductory press conference at this school.
I love you. See, witnesses? I'm circling the witnesses. There are hundreds, at least 100 witnesses in this room.
Everyone will confirm I said it.
Yeah. You saying that I'm negligent doesn't fly here. I'm sorry. That's just, I went to the tape. Okay. That might be how you feel, but here we got to decide. We got to look at the tape.
God. What an awful nightmare.
What a nightmare. I was joking that Pac-12 didn't hire that guy at all. They didn't hire. They went freaky again. They just freestyled it. Yeah. Just did what they were going to do. They hired a guy who, okay. They hired a guy who's going to make the money.
Sure.
That's really what this dude is going to do. His name's George Kliavkoff, which, cool name. I like it. George Kliavkoff, one, is going to have a name that I really look forward to college football TV personalities attempting to pronounce on air. It's going to be awesome. Two, has his last collegiate sports experience happened when he rode at Boston University. How does this keep happening, by the way? The Pac-12 keeps hiring people who come from, like, deeply non-revenue sports. Last guy was a tennis guy. This dude's a rower. I don't even know if they have water in the Pac-12 until you hit the Pacific, frankly.
They got rivers. Colorado's got rivers. Utah has a salt lake.
They're not out there sculling on it.
Arizona is, you know, lack of water is kind of their whole deal.
Oh, my God, though. Like, can you imagine Lake Havasu? A bunch of, like, composed collegiate rowers and somebody just jet skiing through it. Ibra!
You know, rowing was the original revenue sport, of course. Like Ivy Leagues, this was big time cheating ringer, bagman material 170 years ago. So the Pac-12, those were your glory days. Simply pine for those days to come back. But like, I think one thing is by hiring someone who knows that money exists and is a resource that is finite, and that can be used for things other than paying the commissioner, that is, you know, hiring the opposite of your ex, right? Like that is a step for this person has thought about money before, you know? So we're making progress, Pac-12.
This is progress.
Larry Scott, like, I don't know if he knew what numbers are.
No, I think he went to Harvard, so he definitely didn't. And I think, by the way, they hired somebody who is basically like Larry Scott, but went to public school. He went to Boston University. That's where George Kliavkov went. So the chances of him being just an outright kleptocrat went down slightly, right? Because if you hire the guy went to Harvard, you're like, oh, yeah, that expense account, dude is going to steal. Dude's just going to, the chances, won't even know it, too. Like, that's just what people get, right? I went to Harvard. We just, you get the penthouse suite, right? They just give those things to you. Yeah, that's exactly the way they work, sir. So chances of him being an outright kleptocrat just went down a little bit. I also think that he worked for Major League Baseball for BAM, Uh-oh. Baseball Advanced Media, which and Hulu and like Hearst, and these all have something in common. They make money, and they make money off of things that don't even necessarily have any intrinsic value, like baseball. Baseball makes money. Okay? And you say, well, Pac-12's got issues. Pac-12 attendance was down 13%, which is twice as much over the past 2 years, I think, was the average. And that's twice as much as it was everywhere else in the country. Like, everywhere in the country's down because it's so good to sit on your couch now. It's so good. And there's so many things to do. There's so many different ways to spend your time. And in the Pac-12, there's so many ways to spend your time, except for rowing. You can't row, but you can go outside and do everything else. But in the Pac-12, attendance is down. I think they looked at this. I think they thought, well, who's managed to make money off of something with falling attendance, no real projection of future growth, and a fan base that's just dwindling year by year with no end in sight? Oh, this guy. Yeah, he worked for baseball, and he made them money. Good job.
Yeah,
I think that was their thinking.
He's done gambling stuff, and we know for a long time Pac-12 has been interested in getting into Las Vegas. And I think that's kind of a funny connection because it's like, do you think you have to know someone in Las Vegas to be invited? Like, their entire thing is they'll literally let anyone in. You know, I don't think you need to have someone invite you as if it is a secret club. But the Pac-12 being the most gambling-friendly conference, sure, that's a great idea. Their games are on late at night when people have bad ideas, and the Pac-12 should capitalize on bad ideas. That is the main thing they have had going for them for 15 years. So why not lean directly into it? And you know, if players can get a direct cut of each gamble, like perfect. If I can bet on some sort of fight to break out between Arizona and Oregon State, and each participating player gets a cut, like we are solving all of our problems in real time. Yeah, like gambling in college sports is going to happen, and they're going to figure out a way to do it because it's a way to make money and they like money. And I really like just the open crassness of this approach. Like, you know, the SEC would be like cute and demure and roundabout and, oh, no, we're not really doing that. But the Pac-12, just fucking go for it, man. That's awesome.
Well, the SEC's approach has historically been a very southern one, that the thing might be done. And then when asked for comment, there will be a demur, a dodge, a, well, we don't need to talk about that now, do we? Do we? That's been the case with every kind of advance, that the SEC has done it quietly so as not to make a huge deal of it. The SEC has also, by the way, always done things on the, it'd be way easier if we just let them do it. For instance, SEC Network. What did they do? Very sensible thing. We're a sports conference. We're not really a media company. How about we let a media company build that? Oh, hey, there's a media company that'll build the SEC network for us. Cool. The Pac-12, not a media company. Previous commissioner decided they were and decided to attempt to engineer a completely new kind of television network with no real track record of that model working because it sounded cool.
Well, so it worked for the Big Ten because the Big Ten is a sports concern. The Pac-12's problem is they are neither a media concern nor a sports concern. Why does the Pac-12 exist, I think, is the fundamental question here. One we have puzzled over for many years, and I'm not quite certain myself. But
I can pick up, like, the Pac-12, I can pick up, like, everything exists for, like, three or four teams, but never for 12. Like, football in the Pac-12 exists for, like, three teams a year. Everyone else, it feels like they're just in dry runs, dress rehearsal, preview opening. There are three or four teams in the Pac-12 that genuinely have things together. And then there are eight teams that are Spider-Man turn out the dark 2 weeks into the run where they're still figuring out what's happening in Act Two. That's everything. That's not to disrespect the teams of the Pac-12. That is to say, depth-wise, sometimes the understudy's understudy can't make the starting lineup. And sometimes there is no understudy for the backup safety, which is why you get wild results in the Pac-12, because the minute you get an injury or two, whoops! Free for all! We've got a future accountant starting at corner. That's very real.
I think the single thing, so the new commissioner, I'm not going to attempt to say his name. You've already handled that for us.
Kliavkov.
He said that one of his goals, he would like the college football playoff to experience. Well, shit, yeah, I bet you do. And wants to figure out money stuff. Okay, I believe that as well. He has also said a primary goal is to have a football national champion soon for the first time in quite a few years. And I have hope here. I actually feel good because there is a thing he can do. Like, this sounds like bullshit bluster. Like, what in the world can a commissioner do to make his teams actually good? But Pac-12 scheduling has been horrendous, unacceptable, inexcusable for many years. Just do it how the SEC does it. Protect your good teams. Bama fans, I hear you whining about bye weeks. This doesn't apply to you. Nothing applies to you. Okay. That is just bare minimum to keep you within the stratosphere. The Pac-12 doesn't have a Bama. They have a USC and an Oregon. You need to give those teams all the help you can, friendly bye weeks. Stop giving them short week road trips to fucking Pullman, Washington, because you could have had a playoff trip without that dumb idea. Stop giving them 12 weeks in a row with no byes and all that bullshit. Just fix Pac-12 scheduling, and you might get a team the number five ranking one of these years. That's it. That's the simple, simple hack. Just what are your good teams? Protect them. You know, your bad teams can complain about it, but that's like fake complaining. That's like try hard tough guy complaining. Just rig Pac-12 scheduling, maximum crookedness. Whoever your best team is, just have them play the nine worst teams in the conference. Let them play Arizona nine times. Great. Now Oregon's 9-0 in conference. See how easy that was? Just do that.
Also, why don't you just go whole hog on NLI and endorsements? Why don't you go harder? Go harder on that. The expression the Wild West exists for a reason. It's because y'all were the original I can't care. I can't care about all that. Well, don't you want beautiful green lawns and churches on Sunday? Hell no! I want a mining camp. It's dusty, filled with cash. That's the dream of the Old West, is a wild frontier where anything can happen. And that athletically could be true, because I think there's something at work in Western states that really doesn't apply when you're trying to get NLI and other things through, say, Southern legislatures, which is that there are people in the West who will literally say no to any form of government intervention, any form. So you know that little carve-out in, say, Georgia's NLI law that says, well, you know, schools don't have to grant full value. They can, you know, we're going to do that, but, you know, there's little carve-outs for percentages, right, that schools can take as a result of this law, and they're sort of built into it. Why don't you go to Arizona? And the instant argument you make in Arizona is this. Hey, athletes who come to Arizona, the government can't tell you to do anything. It's one of the reasons this looks like Arizona. It's one of the reasons it looks like it does. It's because we don't like anybody telling anybody anything to do. Also, there's a lady at my nursery who carries a gun. I don't know why, right? She watches three-year-olds all day with a Glock on her hip. But we won't tell you what to do.
Yeah.
We won't. Also, weed's legal out here. Hey! Weed's totally legal out here.
Oregon State, when you got the kids in for the recruiting visit, and they're like, you know, tell me about your NLI laws. Oregon State, you should be able to say, like, laws? This is Oregon, sir. Laws?
Yeah, the
money
only
is
thing
the
we
only
won't,
law.
The only thing we won't let you do is pump your own gas. That's we put all of our civic emotion and concentration about safety into things like that, right? That's the only thing. Do we put fluoride in our water? No, because that's a communist plot. Are we commies? Maybe. But we don't even trust ourselves, and that's why we don't put fluoride in the water. That's something the Pac-12 can lean into. They go, well, I'm going to be so far from my family. With the endorsement deal, we got you for holding up, like, I don't know, whatever roofing baron gives $3 million to the school a year. Okay, cool. Here. Why don't you take a picture talking about how good this aluminum siding is? You know how many people actually went and bought aluminum siding because of this ad? Zero. You know how many recruits I got out of this? Three. Three good ones who are sitting in Corvallis, Oregon now, right? Because they were coming out of JUCO and they said, well, I can go to Kansas State or I can go to Oregon. I mean, no offense to Manhattan, Kansas. I'm probably going to go to Corvallis.
Where everything is legal, and you get a free chainsaw.
Is that the, like, that should be it? Pac-12 football, everything is legal.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked great for the Southwest Conference, indefinitely.
And here's the thing. There's absolutely no ability to enforce it. The NCAA won't be able to afford the plane tickets to get investigators there. Like, that's when this is over.
This is geography working in your favor. I mean, I know.
Exactly.
You can barely afford anything anyway, but
right.
The more you can, fuck it, add Hawaii and stash all your crimes there. You'd really think the NCAA is going to fly to Hawaii 50 times to investigate mm-mm. every school?
Why? I mean, Hawaii should just be openly corrupt. They should just be a for-profit. That's a for-profit school. Just open business. Who's your current coach? Todd Graham. He's all for it. Guarantee. If you said, hey, Todd Graham, why don't we just start paying players and see how long it takes people on the mainland to figure it out? Todd Graham would go, hey, praise be. Let's go.
like someone has a, say someone has a hot tip snitching on Hawaii. Is the NCAA like, how sure are you? You know, like, listen, my boss said I can't really afford that. Like, can I see it on Google Earth? Is it bad enough cheating to see it on Google Earth? Because if not, I don't know what to tell you, man.
Yeah, but if I'm the boss and I know this sucker's going down anyway, suddenly I get real interested in a protracted, lengthy investigation of the crimes of the Hawaii football program.
Yeah,
you've
sorry,
been there
I got
3 years?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's deeper than we thought. I got to stay another 3 months.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to go undercover. Undercover? What does that require? Well, I'm going to need a Ferrari, and I'm going to need to live at the estate of a mysterious author who I never see, but who only makes me pay $4,000 a month? $4,000 a month? Actual rent, $1,500.
I work for Mark Zuckerberg now. That's how deep this goes out here in Hawaii.
Wow, that's incredible.
The sports crimes are insane. It's a shame.
As a boss, I'll be like, I too must investigate sports crimes in Hawaii.
We'll see. Does Mark Zuckerberg have room? Yes, he does. The NCAA has relocated to Hawaii, and so then the Hawaii's role is now everyone on the mainland can cheat all they want. See what they did?
Yeah, that's it. And by the way, I'll inform on other programs. You come out to Hawaii, start to bust on me, I'll inform on other programs. And you know what those programs do? We coordinate. We're like, yeah, you got to go look at the SEC, buddy. Sorry, this is small potatoes.
Hawaii, how you get them off your scent is like, oh man, they are doing dirt at UConn. And the NCAA is like, God damn it, we have to fly halfway across Earth to go investigate UConn. We're going to bleed the NCAA dry. Yeah, I know. What dirt are they doing at UConn? I don't know. They're paying players to be bad at football. I don't know. You better
UConn
go investigate
could have
it.
Done. UConn could have done so much dirt because an investigator's not going to go there. Like, so you're going to have to go to Storrs, Connecticut in February. No, I'm not. No,
I'm
not.
Sure they're on the up and up. It's fine.
We have other things to do, don't we? Just get on the ground in Storrs, go to the Dunkin', get a coffee, get back on the plane. Don't talk to anybody and be like, yep. Who'd you talk to? Mr. Donut. Talk to him. Totally. Yeah, they're clean. He said it. I got it on tape and everything. The tape is just me leaning into a tape recorder going, I'm Mr. Donut. UConn's clean. Yeah. My boss is like, really? I'm like, yeah, do you want to go? Case closed.
Yeah. Man, we got to join this little group of investigators.
This is the TV show I want. A crack group of investigators trying to run out the clock on their boss and entire organization and steal as much money as possible before the roof caves in.
How far down? So, like, the NCAA always has trouble. Like, we don't have enough investigators and whatever. They won't say it exactly like that, but read between the lines. How far down the, like, hiring process do they have to get before, like, we could apply and be seriously considered? And they're like, you know, well, you guys kind of talked a lot of shit about us for your entire lives, but fuck, we don't have anyone else who can investigate New Mexico State, and like, that's just our job, you know.
How far down? Yeah, I think that's like a 6-month hiring drought before they consider us. Like, and I mean actually aggressively going down and being like, we have eliminated everyone else, we have to hire you. But cool. So we're going to need a Ferrari and a mysterious Oceanside estate.
In New Mexico, yeah.
Yeah, in New Mexico. We'll make it happen. We could do it.
The NCAA is terraforming Earth. I mean, do you care about integrity or not?
I mean, this is Pac-12 talk, like old school Pac-12 talk, right? What are you going to do?
Terraforming?
Terraforming Mars. And then... Yeah. Holding volleyball tournaments there.
No, terraforming Mars and then holding volleyball tournaments in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Like all the previous commissioner of the Pac-12 do, which is an inspiration. If you really want a model for how you should behave at work, follow everything this dude did. Larry Scott would just say things that sounded cool. How are you going to do it? Innovation. Silicon Valley. Disruption. Decentralized. Centralized networks. That's what we're gonna do. And everyone in the room is like, fuck, this guy's good.
Yeah, he had that going for like 3 years there.
Oh yeah.
There was like a year where we're all like smart ass, like, wow, this guy's really smart. And then there's like a year where we're like, oh shit, he's actually smart, you know? And then the clock ran out on that. But so speaking of terraforming, as is usual, I feel like the actual best examples on the world of terraforming, one would be like Dubai. Mm-hmm. In American terms, I think the closest we've come to terraforming anything would be Las Vegas. You know?
Yeah.
A bustling city that should not exist. Just.
A city that is all of about 80 years old, if that, maybe younger, when you consider... like what was there before, because Las Vegas, you know, it's like basically means something like the fields, because there was nothing there. And then in 1960, there's stuff there. It's like all post-war build. And then even then, there's nothing from post-war. Everything in Vegas has... I love Vegas because everything's already been blown up 3 or 4 times. At least. There's been 3 or 4 cycles of, that building's about 16 years old. God, I want to blow it up. Like, the minute a building gets old enough to drive, somebody in Las Vegas is like, I want to blow the shit up out of that thing. God, I just want to level it.
That's the hotel Howard Hughes blew up that one time. There was something like Howard Hughes and, like, nuclear testing and whatever. It's what a place that definitely deserves to exist.
My favorite spot in Las Vegas, outside of Vegas, is one of the nuclear test sites called Jackass Flats.
Sure.
Where that's where a guy, an Air Force general, was flying a MiG that had been confiscated from, I think, North Korea, but don't quote me on that. And, you know, it was like a very fast Russian plane. And when I say fast, you know, Soviet plane, then you imagine, safety was probably not the premier concern of the engineers. This was probably a very dangerous plane. Correct. This general, who was a decorated aviator, and who had all of the arrogance in the world justifiably to walk in and go, I'll figure it out, decided to get behind the wheel of this MiG and just figure the plane out. And some of him is still impacted, I believe, into the soil at Jackass Flats.
Is he the jackass who is flat?
No, but that's where he landed. And that proves that irony never dies.
A MiG-23 it was from Area 51. He mm-hmm. Deceased in Area 25.
Yeah. He said, I got to get out of here. And when he ejected, I believe it broke his neck. And yeah it's real bad. Not a good idea to just decide to freestyle on a MiG. Think I'm going to freestyle on this MiG.
So there are 30. So I'm looking at Wiki. There are 30 areas. Like Area 51 isn't just a.
Yeah.
Like we did count up to 30 and then we skipped ahead to Area 51.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how special it is. It contains areas 31 through 50.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Nevada, Las Vegas, the most terraformed city in the United States, to the point where they kind of, Las Vegas is kind of a mixtape of every other city, because there's actually entire other samples of other cities. There's a New York, just a New York and a Paris, right? Serber, you've never been to Las Vegas, correct?
This is correct.
Okay. What do you think Las Vegas is? I just want from somebody who's never been there. And Jason, you've been multiple times. I've been too much. I think whatever number I actually have been there is too much. Serber, you've never been there. What do you think it is?
New Orleans West.
Wow.
Like that's what I think of. But basically, it's Vegas Vacation, right? The Chevy Chase, the third movie or fourth movie in that franchise. Just that.
So that is, if I said like, what do you think like a normal day there would be? Not that there is a normal day in Las Vegas, but like what do you think people do when they go to Las Vegas?
I don't think they remember what they do when they go to Las Vegas, but they
just... Your guesses are real accurate so far. I'm just going to tell you.
Server, how can you be sure you've never been to Las Vegas?
Yeah, that's true. And weed is legal there now too, which has a whole other dimension. Basically, I think you probably wake up, you go to the CVS, get a bottle of Jack Daniels, head down to the sports book, mm-hmm. figure out how much divorce you want,
mm-hmm.
And I would say, like, I imagine there being, like, I know people say get married by Elvis, like, that's a cliche in Vegas, but, like, I truly imagine there being about 50 of those, but being pretty close together. There's a part of, I imagine that Vegas has, like, an get married by Elvis part of town.
It does. See, it's like the chapel. Yeah, it's sort of.
But there's not just one, yeah. Right? It's like chapels as far as the eyes can
like
see.
Like a whole district.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like that neighborhood that popped up in between Nashville proper and like the Marathon Village thing. Remember when that wasn't there and then it was like 2 days later? But they're all chapels in Vegas.
This is very accurate. I don't know if you need to go.
Yeah, I'm probably good. Is Wayne Newton still there?
Oh, no, he's dead.
Did he die?
Well, these are not mutually exclusive.
That's true. He is still there. Yes, I believe Wayne Newton is dead, but I'm going to verify that and make sure that Wayne Newton is dead.
You tried to kill him. He's alive.
Newton. Yeah, man. Wow.
He's alive?
Totally.
I have killed Wayne Newton. I have done what man has dreamed of for years, but no man has accomplished. He's still alive.
First Wayne Newton, next Keith Richards, then the world.
That would be, yeah. No, I don't like, I believe he has retired, but he's still a spokesperson for Caesars. That's amazing.
What? So let's see. For a person who has a Google News alert for Wayne Newton, here are the kinds of things they would find. I mean, the first 3 days ago, Mr. Las Vegas, still in the game. Still in the league. Man, he looks great.
He's... this is the man who slapped Johnny Carson, by the way. Like,
this man looks embalmed.
He is perfectly preserved.
He looks so accurate.
It's a real Wayne Newton.
Listen, he performed on Letterman once, and Wayne can kind of thrash on the guitar. Like, he's a pretty good guitar player. I was personally stunned at that. Also, he sang like this because everyone made fun of his natural singing voice, which is real high. Like, naturally, he sings up here. And everyone made fun of him, so he was like, no, I'm Wayne Newton.
Guess, I sing like Batman. I want the two of you to guess how many followers Wayne Newton has on Twitter.
580.
2.2 million.
7,000.
What?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be
more that's
ridiculous.
Respectable, Wayne. That's respectable.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, it's like a good barbecue account. It's about 7,000. Good job, man. You know, it's like him and La Barbecue in Austin, Texas have, you know, about the same number of followers.
On Instagram, 4,000. What a modest man of the people.
Huh.
Core audience. That's about just keep your core audience, baby.
Day ones. Yeah.
Day one. Listen, $50 tier Patreon supporters of Wayne Newton.
No new friends for Wayne Newton.
I'm loving it.
Star of Match Game, Wayne Newton.
So, yeah, this is if the idea is that we're going to turn the Pac-12 into Vegas, 100% for this, because that might mean, I mean, there already is like a Pac-12 team with a sports betting partnership.
Oh, right.
Colorado. Yeah, Colorado already has that. So we just get everybody saddled up with that and do in-stadium gaming with the Pac-12 title game in Las Vegas every year. That instantly becomes like the best conference championship trip. Like, hands down. I've been to a zillion SEC title games, and automatically the prospect of seeing, of gambling and drinking live, which, you know, like, you can't really do either. You mean, you can drink at the SEC championship, but like, it's not going to be like that. I'm not going to be able to get bottle service. Not that I would. But I could.
I want champagne at the SEC championship. That's what I want. While I watch Alabama beat someone 58-12.
It does mean more. It instantly becomes the best championship game. Because one, that plane ticket's cheap. That's a cheap plane ticket. That's a subsidized plane ticket in a lot of instances, right? If you buy it at the right place. You can package it. You go out there. You know you're going to be able to get a flight out. You know you're going to be able to get a hotel room. You know there's going to be something to do. Right? Let's go look at the Lions at the MGM. Then let's go watch Oregon beat Arizona by 40 points. In a Roomba. A huge, evil, black Roomba. In the desert. That shouldn't be there. An affront to God. I want to watch my college football in a huge affront to God.
All right, I forgot about this football stadium. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a huge black Roomba.
So fucking Dubai.
Yeah.
This is unreal.
It is. It's like Emirates. It's just like hillbilly Emirates. That's what it looks like. Hilljack Emirates. That's exactly what Las Vegas is. You know? Which I will tell you, server, you really should go, because my favorite thing in Las Vegas is people watching, especially Crying Girl Hour. Crying Girl Hour. The wagon wheel
in the background.
Yeah, there's some John Mayer track, right?
Yeah. James Blunt.
I can't figure out what's happening, because usually it's younger women somewhere between the age of 21 and 24, and they're mad at Brandon, Chad, Todd, or Brennan, and something has happened. Now, Brennan might have been a dick. Maybe they're just mad that they're having fun, because dudes having fun generally means nothing good, right? What'd you do? I lost $500. It was awesome. No, that's not awesome. Yeah, it was. But there's this hour that happens around 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, where suddenly there are just young crying ladies everywhere learning the disappointment of masculinity.
When is crying boy hour, though? Because that sounds that sounds so much more fun.
There is never crying boy hour in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
There are only happy men.
Home.
Yeah.
It's on the plane back home.
There's
that's
only
like, that's there, like explaining to mom where all your money went.
Getting home and explaining to someone what just happened and why you thought it was fun. Everyone goes there, and like New Orleans, this is why servers like comparison was so good. Everyone turns to donkeys, and the things they're doing don't really look fun unless you're drunk and doing them too. That's the idea. You go, wow, man, I just watched this guy drop a grand at blackjack, and like he's drinking Red Bull and lighter fluid, and he and his boys are just saying the same four words over again to each other. Yeah, right, bro. Oh, yeah, right, yeah. And you go, wow, that seems terrible. And then you start doing it. You're like, well, that seemed too bad. This isn't half bad at all. But from the outside, it looks terrible. It's all fun while it's happening. And then you have to go home.
I have a question for a Vegas expert, Server. Server, if you were to recommend the ideal length of a Vegas trip, in terms of hours, days, weeks, what have you, what is the amount of time that pops into your head?
Mm-hmm. 72 hours.
Ooh, that's close.
That's within range, I think. Yeah.
Any longer and you're going to stay there.
I think wheels down to wheels up, 72 hours. I'm going to count some transit in there. Okay. So door to door, if you leave your house and you get back to your house in 72 hours, that's good. You don't want to be in Vegas when the 72 hour mark hits, because that's when the sad happens. That's when the big sad hits you. You go, oh, this is how they live all the time. Oh, no. Oh, God. That jolly person I saw dealing blackjack wanted to be a singer. Lady's never leaving.
I'm feeling 36 to 60 hours as like a hard limit for a Vegas trip. Like that's, you get a night or two there and time enough to compose yourself after that night or two there, and you could lose a lot of money in that time, but this decreases your chances. And like, man, nothing is as fun the first night, and the diminishing returns on Vegas, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Like night four, not
at all. Night four is,
well, night two is, I've awesome. Night four, oh no, get out of there.
it's now part of me. It's getting inside me.
You literally pushed your luck.
Yeah. Also, there's this thing that happens around day three or four where the sound of whirring casino machines starts to become normal to you, and that's when you start to get the fear that maybe I've adapted, maybe I understand. You get time distortion. Time distortion is very real because, Server, they do not let you see clocks. There are no clocks. There are no windows in casinos.
Well, how could you ever be sure of exactly where you are? Because, like, basically, yeah, Vegas is just, seems like it's just a bunch of different versions of the exact same thing. So, like, if you don't see the entrance or exit, if you will, of the casino, how could you ever really be sure which one you're in?
Yeah. I feel this. I mean, yeah, my number of times being there, pretty much every time, whatever group I'm with, you know, we'll go to one casino and then someone will just have the sense, the urge, the urgency, we need to be at a different casino, and you go there, and to my untrained eye, nothing is different. Maybe the prices on this or that game are different, but like, yeah, Server, again, you are dead on. I'm now convinced you have been to Vegas, quite frankly.
Yeah. No, you really got it. They're all designed to keep you inside, really. And the way they do this at sportsbooks, there's different approaches, but at the Wynn and at the Venetian, the sportsbooks are so comfortable that it's not a matter of keeping you in. It's a matter of making it too comfortable to leave. Like, the Wynn has these really plush chairs, and there's like a nice person who comes around and brings you alcohol. And, you know, I could just sit here. What? I watch the 3 o'clock block of games. Well, I'll just let it roll into the six. Well, I'll just let it roll into the nine. Oh, shit. It's Tuesday. Girl, this chair's comfy. Yeah. That's very, very real. And without clocks or windows to really orient you. Or, frankly, by the way, if you're at the tables, the ability to use your phone, because you are not to do that at the tables, is to use your phone. Without that, man, it's just you in the stream of time. Jump in, swim, see where you come out. Maybe it's 2 hours from now. If you're winning, maybe it's 20. Who can say? It's going to be the best. It's going to be the best championship game. It's going to be unreal. It's going to be great. And the missing ingredient in all of this, by the way, is this: Western Bros. Western Bros, completely different kind of bro, completely different kind of dude. Like, if you want to say, hey, I found a new type of guy, not a new type of guy, but if I'm elaborating the taxonomy of guys, the Western guy, oh, the diversity of different kinds of Western guy is amazing, but none of them really care about anything. It's great. they're going to be phenomenal.
What if, so I liked the Big Ten's slap together idea of, you know, best team playing best team, playing worst team, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Vegas feels built for that. Just a whole Pac-12 mm-hmm. weekend. And, you know, pair up teams with parts of town, you know? So that Arizona-Cal game, that's your, like, that's a 3 a.m. somewhere, whether it's Friday or Saturday. Or Wednesday or whatever, you know. Yeah, we need. Why don't we just put all Pac-12 football in Vegas? How about that? Does it need to be anywhere else?
You know, play a game or two in Pullman. That's, you know, I don't think it's Pac-12 unless there's a November game where it's sneeting, not sleeting, sneeting, and there's some guy covered in ice drinking a 750 milliliter bottle of alcohol on camera. But other than that, no, you can move the rest of them there.
Each team gets one home game. Everything else is in Vegas.
Better make that home game count, y'all. Which team doesn't get a home game? Like, I'm sure that there will be some mathematical anomaly where one team does not get a game. Who do we take it away from? Stanford? They don't want it anyway.
Oregon's going to UCLA. UCLA, absolutely. They're the ones that get screwed out of this. It's just, you know, that's just what happens to UCLA.
I think we just have the Rose Bowl like 9 or 10 times a year with different teams. Just rent out.
But
you
never
know, like,
UCLA. Never UCLA.
Never. No. UCLA. They haven't earned it, right? Like, it's amazing what a magical venue that is and how all of the magic is stripped out of it the instant UCLA plays the home game there.
Like, yeah, 90% of the football games in the Rose Bowl are UCLA. Why do we let mm-hmm. that happen? You think you're getting away with something, UCLA, don't you?
Do you know the most powerful football, the most powerful football program in the world and the most aesthetically pleasing would be if Alabama was allowed to play all of their home games in the Rose Bowl? Can you imagine anything? Like, no, that's Vikings playing home games in Valhalla.
Let's go one step further. Alabama has UCLA's colors. UCLA has very nice uniforms, very nice colors. Alabama now wears powder blue and gold. Those are Alabama's colors. It's basically, we'll just replace UCLA entirely with Alabama. Rose Bowl and everything.
It would be so stunning, though, because we would look at it and go, wow, when did UCLA get huge? These guys are massive.
UCLA is so fucking badass. That's what I've always thought.
They're swole as hell.
God, UCLA is terrifying. I have never thought that in my life. You know what I mean?
Roll damn bear. I was watching, I've been watching old games a lot this spring, and I was watching the two-part series known as Ole Miss Alabama 2014-2015, aka the Dr. Bo Generalissimo Chad Kelly like movie and sequel. And I was watching, it's amazing how different Alabama's defenders look, because even as recently as 2014 and 15, they were still on the fat guy plan. And I don't mean fat. I just mean they were massive. Like, they were massive even at positions like linebacker or star, where you needed to move a little bit more. They still just look like gigantic hogs, all of them. They don't look like that now. Like, Alabama guys are obviously still real big and strong, but when they went to like a more hybrid type defense so that they could keep up with spread offenses in earnest, it wasn't that they just lost like 5 pounds. I think everybody in that defense just got like 15 pounds leaner, because I'm watching Reggie Ragland crash into people and I'm like, I don't know if Alabama has any dude who looks that huge. Even if they weigh the same, they don't look the same. Am I saying Alabama went low carb? Yeah, they went low carb.
So maybe that's a fun thought thing, is like, imagine a current Bama defense against, you know, the Chad Kelly Rebels or Johnny Manziel's Aggies, and like, oh, all those fun memories. Weren't they fun? Those were sweet, sweet moments. You're like, A&M lost by 37 points.
Or even just 14, because you're like, Alabama scored 78. It's nuts. They was like, they would have won, but Devontae Smith had 400 yards receiving and 8 TDs. It's crazy, man. Yeah, they would have, I'm sure like Nick probably watches that film and is just like, oh, I wish I'd just gotten them smaller.
Minutes after the national title, grinding his gears about losing to LSU in 2011.
Must make hosses smaller. Smaller hosses.
Smaller.
The other thing that I adore about the notion of Las Vegasizing the entire Pac-12 is that we can finally get away from the idea of making them into a proper football league and just turn them into a transparent media property meant to rake in cash despite the declining product. That's all I want. I don't want the Pac-12 like, oh, Pac-12 resurgent. Pac-12 with 3 teams in the top 10. No, I don't. I don't want that. I want like maybe 1 team in the top 10, and I want baffling financials. I want like the SEC to be like, what are we doing wrong? We handed out this much, and the Pac-12 handed out $57 million to each school. How? How did they do this?
Are you saying like the Pac-12 is handing out like $10 million coaching contracts and USC has 3 losses?
Yeah.
No? Yeah. Okay.
That's what I want. I want them to all look like Texas financially. I want them to all go, wow, we went.
So $10 million contracts and 3 losses, just like
Texas. We went eight and four, and goddamn, this program grossed like $90 million or also, netted $90 million.
I'm sorry, I said Texas had 3 losses. They only do that when it's a 10-game season.
Yeah. They got to go 10-2. That's because, remember, Texas, in my mind, every year goes 10-2. With one of those losses being to Oklahoma.
Texas should join the Pac-12. That was a rumor for a while. It would be a really good fit.
Slide on in, brothers. Come on.
I mean, look
at this. What have you got to lose? Why don't you give up on being good and instead just be a tax shell? Why don't you give up
on being good? Join the Pac-12.
Well, yeah. Why be good when you can make money? What is a more American story than that? What is more American than the notion of profit without quality?
Texas UCLA Pac-12 championship in Las Vegas. Man, what a dream.
I'm dreaming about it right now, man. It's right there on the tip of my tongue. I can taste it. Man. You know what it tastes like? That ashtray next to me at the 8th hour of the blackjack table, where I'm trying to win back money next to some loud, drunk dude in Sacramento who's telling me that the Deftones are really underrated. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm tasting,
at this point, they are, I would say. Probably yeah, not back I, then, but
no. But I agree with this man I just made up. The other
I made up the, a guy just to agree with him. That is the
other
the vibes, the vibes version of Twitter.
The other proposal I have is this: I think that they should sell name, image, and likeness, and the Pac-12 should be the first schools to go ahead and offer their students endorsement deals for the program. That
okay?
For instance, you know, Justin Herbert could have said, "You know what? Hi, I'm Justin Herbert from the Oregon Ducks for the Oregon Ducks." When I want you to come out for the stadium, just an innovative idea that you should pay them to advertise for the program. Is this in the spirit of any other NLI bill? No. Is it contrary to any of the cornerstone beliefs and practices of amateurism? Absolutely not. Should they try it anyway, just so that they can start paying recruits actual money? Hell yeah. Do that. And then George Klyavkov, do some crazy meteorite shit where every school gets like, you know, $70 million somehow, despite the actual value of the products being around $20 million, $17 million. And then give it to players so that they'll come. It'll come crashing down, but it'll be an amazing 5 to 7 years.
What if we invent PacCoin? What if the Pac, I mean, like, you know,
we're here.
Silicon Valley.
We're finally here.
So
the crypto conference.
The crypto conference. PacCoin, I feel like that's pretty good.
You ready? You ready? Ready? Football. Football's about tackling and blocking. Blocking. What was the original blockchain? An offensive line. Are you feeling this?
Uh-huh.
Are you hearing this? Yeah.
Duck coin.
the real sketchy one is what is Zona coin. Zona coin.
Sparky coin. Oh my god. Ute coin. There we go. That's the one. That's like the steady sober investment.
That's
like,
a steady.
There
that's
are
a
no
steady
massive
winner
spikes.
Right there, man.
Like
yeah.
Elon Musk tweets about Ute coin and nothing happens.
Yeah.
Folks, have I got a deal for you? Acorns.com/fullcast. If you'd like to get in on the ground of our crypto scheme, you're going to need a steady financial base. And the simplest way I know of to do such a thing is with the Acorns app, which lets me nickel and dime my way to retirement. I am currently, holy shit, I have $600-something in here. I didn't even know that. I haven't actually been looking at the number each week.
You're going to Vegas.
I'm
going to
blow all this shit in Vegas, baby. And double my retirement. No, I'm not. I'm going to trust the process. I'm going to trust Acorns. I'm going to trust Ute coin to deliver me to retirement. I have it said, just throw in $5 a week and nickels and dimes for my purchases, and then investment stuff happens within the market. And I'll beat that market at the blackjack table, but I won't, because I'm not going, because I trust acorns.com/fullcast.
That's excellent. I think that it's very important for everyone when they go to Vegas to feel like that they're representing their team as you know, hard as they can, you know, because you got, there's a lot of things going on in Vegas. Might be a convention, might be another convention, might be another convention. There's always like 9 conventions. You want people to know where you're coming from. You want them to know who you rep, and you want them to know that, like most things in Las Vegas, there's going to be a little bit of style to it. And that's why I need you to embrace the comfort, style, and unique charm of Home Field Apparel. I don't know why I got like super sexy right there.
That maybe was very sexy.
Maybe because Home Field Apparel is so sexy. All right. Get your extremely sexy redos, your refreshes of so many schools, so many different brands this year for 2021 for spring. I really have enjoyed all of them to this point, to the point where it's probably really bad for my finances. I think for Home Field, by the way, I'm supposed to sing Home Field to the tune of Jolene. I want to wait till Ryan and Holly are here, because if I do that without them making fun of me, it really won't feel as right, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm continuing to rehearse my version of Jolene with, "I'm begging you, please don't take my cash.
Please don't take my pants."
Please don't take my pants.
I think speaking of sexy home field, the sexiest school here is obviously Slippery Rock. Followed by Grand Valley State. That is also somewhat sexy. I would like I think the school I would most like to roll up to Vegas in is probably Houston Baptist. That might be the single most.
I think for sheer tongue in cheek sexiness, the Oklahoma State Ride with Pride T-shirt is definitely one of the ways to go. I loved that particular refresh, but I'm kind of a sucker for Oklahoma State's gear anyway, in any format. Home fields are absolutely lovely in that respect. I'm also big on everything that they've done with Houston. Houston's good. It's red, so if you're lost and drunk in the crowd, your friends will be able to find you a little easier in Las Vegas if you're wearing a red Houston Phi Slamma Jamma shirt. Remember, you can get 20% off your first order with the promo code FULLCAST. That's the promo code FULLCAST. Home field apparel. The realist, the good brand, the one that will help you when your friends need to find you before you get arrested for drunk and disorderly in Las Vegas.
Oh, the Vanderbilt. Oh, my God. You're going to go to Vegas in a Vandy shirt.
Because you want to get beaten up. Or.
Well, that's one way to make friends.
That is one way to make a friend. Nobody has ever said that about Vanderbilt. You know, I'm wearing a Vanderbilt shirt because I want to make friends. Vanderbilt walks in and is like, I'm not here to make friends. What are you here to do? I don't know.
Yeah.
Overpay for an undergraduate education. That's what I'm here to do. I mean, where else in the South can you go to spend 4 years playing golf? It's like literally nowhere else. How?
Cerber, let's see. In terms of Vegas, in terms of the entertainment activities that one could peruse, which gambling game do you feel that you have the best handle on?
Shit. You can't just play like straight up poker in Vegas, right?
I mean, you can.
Yeah,
somewhere.
You can. You can. I mean, you play in a room and the house gets a cut. That's how it works.
You can't play.
That.
I don't like that. I guess it would be blackjack then.
Yeah. Okay.
Blackjack. Jason, you're not a huge gambler if you did have to. What is your game?
I know the rules of blackjack. I think it's been a long time. I don't get for whatever reason, like betting on sports is fun, but like betting on like cards and shit is like, it feels like a game on top of a game where, I guess I'd probably also go with blackjack. Spencer, of course, you're mainly a roulette guy, but
yes,
is there also,
because I'm an idiot.
Cause yeah. You have perfected it. You've just figured out the strategies.
Yeah. You just have to have a good attitude. That's it. You have to have
vibes,
an excellent attitude.
Just vibes.
Yeah. You have to have no fear and a really good attitude. And it's an idiot's game because it involves a very large wheel. Like it involves the closest thing to a Parker Brothers board game setup, right? You couldn't just play roulette with cards. No, you have to go to the store and buy the special box that has the idiot's wheel. That somebody goes, yeah, this is a skill.
Yeah, the
spins
skill
the ball around.
The skill is just saying colors, right?
Well, yeah, there's only two to choose from.
There's only two to choose. Yeah,
just the skill is being decisive.
I mean, I insist the skill is having a good attitude. That's the only thing that I've managed to figure out. Also, just bet enough money, depending on whether it's an American or European table, so that you're essentially flipping a coin. That's it, right? Just throw, $18 out there and voila. Maybe you hit, maybe you don't. Either way, it's a great time because when you win, you feel like a mad scientist. It paid off! 1-36! Or whatever it is.
I knew what I was doing.
Yeah, I knew what I was doing. These were numbers. I've obviously calculated the optimal payout rate and loss rate over time. I'm going to play again because I'm very smart, Also, The roulette table is the one place where you can usually find chips on the floor. Little secret I'm going to let you in on, because they, you know, they give you like a big stack. They don't just give you like three. They don't just give you like three tens and six. No, they'll give you like 36 ones. So if you look on the floor, which is multicolored to hide the fact that there are chips floating around down there, take a look. I think I'm lifetime up to $550 or so I have found underneath roulette tables.
Oh, shit. I am never gambling if I go to Vegas. I am only doing that exclusively.
That's gambling. I think that's gambling. That is the opportunity cost of it doing literally anything else. And you're choosing it to spend there when you could find zero chips, or you could find $550 worth of chips.
I mean,
that's gambling.
I think you could find, it wouldn't be too hard to find enough to basically pay for your trip. Because that's one thing I've heard about Vegas, is that if you do not gamble, it is the cheapest vacation you can go on.
Yeah.
Because like rooms are nothing. They're just like,
yeah,
we're going to,
I mean, you can fly
like
there and back for fucking $80. And if like, so like my favorite thing to do around Vegas is like, there's really great hiking. You can go out there and hike for almost fucking free.
Yeah. There's like a, there's a massive mountain just outside of Las Vegas that is free and beautiful. And sometimes has skateboarders just going down the whole thing. Yeah. It's like a 7,500 foot mountain, Mount Charleston. And you can go out there and see, like, the nuclear test sites and this stunning desert scenery. And, yes, idiot skateboarders going down the entire length of Mount Charleston on the road. And you can just soak all that in for free.
You could watch Pac-12 football for free.
The majesty.
I mean, I don't even know the last time I saw Pac-12 football. Imagine just stumbling upon it.
I'm just going to let y'all know, if there's an actual roulette table within sight of the field in the stadium, I'm not going to make it back. It's not happening.
Yeah, you're just going to enroll at UCLA?
I'm going to enroll at UCLA Vegas. Yeah, which we're not even going to call it Vegas. That's just UCLA now.
UC Vegas.
UC. Yeah, the LA stands for Las Vegas. That's just one word. Las Vegas. Yeah, going to enroll at UCLA. And then I'm going to drive over to LA so I can catch Alabama home games, you know? Pasadena, the traditional home of the Tide, where it all started for Alabama, actually. Don't forget that. It's when they beat Washington's ass back in the 20s. See? This is Alabama coming home. Come home, Bama. Come back to the Rose Bowl.
Mama's calling.